Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we're getting a veteran's perspective on cannabis, and we are joined by Salvador Gonzalez. Sal, thank you for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me, Eric. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic, and we are so excited to be talking to you today. And we would love if you would give us a little bit of an introduction to yourself and the work you're doing with the Wounded Warrior Project.
Sure. So please call me Sal. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, California, and I was a musician. I was always planning on being a musician, and the events of 9/11 changed my opinion or changed my path there for just a little while. After 9/11, I decided that I would join the United States Marine Corps. And so I went overseas as a infantryman with 2nd Battalion, 5th Marines. I served in Al Ramadi, Iraq, where I was wounded, resulting in the amputation of my left leg in 2004. After returning home, I moved to Nashville to pursue my career as a musician. And I kind of fell into a depression. I fell into a depression. There was a lot of drinking, a lot of overindulgence in my life. And that all sort of changed when Wounded Warrior Project came calling. They asked me if I wanted to go on a thing called Soldier Ride. And I said, sure. And so I went on this bike ride with a bunch of other veterans, and I realized that all the things that I was doing was very similar to all the things that my friends were doing. And so once I realized that it was not just me, I wasn't the special little snowflake that was self-isolating and over-medicating and all that stuff, I decided to make a change, and I started using my talents to try and, I don't know, bring awareness to what was going on in our community. So ever since that day, or ever since that first ride, I've been, you know, I've played music for anybody that'll have me who's trying to raise money.
Sal, when did you learn to play the guitar? What got you into music?
My dad was a musician. So my dad played from the time that I was, before I was born. And when I finally decided that I wanted, that I thought the guitar could get me a girlfriend, I asked him if he would teach me, and so he taught me. He brought me a guitar and taught me my basic chords, and then I was off to the races. So I played in bands in high school. I started playing guitar at probably 12, 13, and by the time I was in high school, I was good enough to like play rhythm guitar and sing. Singing has always been my first love, but the guitar has been my constant companion, so...
Talk about who do you emulate, if you will, as a rhythm guitarist in the world.
Oh,
and by the way, the reason I asked that question is I'm a big fan of the Grateful Dead, and perhaps one of the most prominent, but also one of the most unusual rhythm guitarists of all time would be the infamous Bobby Weir. And when you isolate that rhythm guitar as juxtaposed against the rest of the band. And this is true for so many folks that either don't listen closely or haven't had the opportunity to sort of just focus on rhythm guitar playing. It's such an interesting element to the band that goes unnoticed sometimes, but it holds it all together.
It does. You're right. Absolutely. Everything you just said, I agree with. My favorite guitar player, I think, I mean, it's Stevie Ray Vaughan is by far the greatest guitar player of all time, in my very humble opinion. But when it comes to like a rhythm guitar player, I really like somebody like a Brian Setzer from the Stray Cats, where it's a little bit of a mixture of the lead and mostly rhythm guitar. It's just there's something magical about that style of play.
No, that's a great one. And when you started playing, is there a particular style that you like to sing or play best when you first got into to playing and getting out there?
Oh, absolutely. I was primarily a rock and roll guy. There was a lot of R&B also in sort of the cultural zeitgeist of where I grew up. And then, you know, you always got to learn the Spanish songs for the grandma, because if you don't, she's going to get mad at you.
Got to take care of abuela.
So there's always a fair amount of, yo sé bien que estoy afuera, pero el día que yo me muera. So
that is fantastic, Sal. That is fantastic.
Sal, you know, the military has a very strict policy for all kinds of cannabis, and they have for a long time, and even for CBD. So give us a little bit of if you will, when cannabis really entered your life, after the experience that you had at war, the positive experience it had on you, and then just your thoughts on the rigid approach by the federal government of not allowing veterans access really for marijuana or CBD as a therapeutic medicine.
Yeah, I growing up, I was a DARE kid. I bought all of the propaganda hook, line, and sinker. I believed all the Reagan era studies that said it was gonna kill your brain cells. They had me. And when I joined the military, I didn't miss the thing that I never really had. You know, I'd smoked marijuana probably twice. I'd smoked cannabis twice and ate a brownie accidentally in high school just from having friends who were musicians and whatnot. But it wasn't until I got out of the military that I came back to it. I was 27 or 28 years old. I was drinking fairly heavily to go to bed at night, and I was telling one of my buddies, another veteran buddy of mine, about my issues with insomnia and whatnot. And this is a very common thing in my family. Insomnia is normal. And he goes, dude, quit your whining and smoke a joint already. You'll be fine. And he gave me some, because we live in Tennessee where it's very highly, highly illegal still. I think Nashville just decriminalized it. So in Davidson County, if you have under an ounce, I think it's just a ticket or something. But I went home and I smoked that joint, and I had some of the best night's rest I'd ever had in my life. Shortly thereafter, it started becoming a part of my nightly routine. And one night I decided to go running, and I accidentally smoked before going out for my run. And it became one of my favorite stoned activities, was going on a run at night.
Well, and that's something, by the way, when you utilize cannabis and you mix, activity, it's counterintuitive sometimes about how those things actually fit like a hand in a glove, not just for recovery.
Oh,
sort of just active use, right?
Just the euphoria you feel from the runner's high. Once that kicks in, it makes your whole body feel good. It's a hard experience to try and describe. This runner's high is already such a weird experience. go on.
No, please. I was going to ask you a little bit about that topic of using it and just the stigma attached to it. And sort of, how did you get through that? Obviously, using it, you experienced relief in, you know, there was instances in the past that sort of, you know, caused you to question perhaps that DARE drug mentality. But what is it? What is it about this plant and how it's been pitched that so many people are just so averse to it? And then when you finally recognize that it's, you know, it's benevolent, it's helpful, it's not this treacherous, death-inducing plant that the propaganda would have you believe, what do you do? What do you think about? Have you been lied to all your life? And, you know, more importantly, what about the relief therefrom?
Well, for me, I knew it wasn't going to kill me the first time. You know, I knew I'd already had some experience when I was younger. And I feel like that's most people's experience. Most people at this point in the world just kind of know that it's as safe can be. I think that's not really as big of a stigma anymore. I think it's only a matter of time before politicians get wise to the fact that people understand that they have a vested interest in keeping this thing illegal with the war on drugs. And I'm sure there's a lot of lobbies paying to make sure things stay illegal. And I don't know, honestly.
But Sal, it hasn't been a smooth ride as it relates to the VA, right? I mean, if you think about it, the VA, at least in recent years, the Veterans Administration has sort of gone back and forth on the use of any form of cannabis, let alone self-containing THC. Does that ever concern you? You've got the relief, you've got the support, but does it concern you that, you know, there's this notion out there that you could lose potentially benefits? Someone who's given so much, like yourself, for the military service to this country, and that you could lose benefits in part, or at least in theory, based on some of those aggressive enforcement positions or policy positions they've taken?
Yeah, that bothers me. Of course that bothers me. But I lost faith in the VA system a long time ago. I go for them to pay for my legs, and that's all I go to them for. I pay to see a civilian doctor to handle anything that is wrong with me physically, and I pay a civilian doctor to take care of my mental health. I've been let down by the federal government way too many times in my life to trust that they're just going to take care of me. So, unfortunately, I'm sure you've heard the stigma of 22 veterans a day commit suicide. And one of those suicides was a friend of mine who hanged himself on the premises of the VA hospital here in Nashville. I've had my heart broken too many times to really just give a shit what anybody thinks in as far as the federal government's concerned.
Well, it's extremely fair, Saul. And, you know, we appreciate you sharing that here with us, because it's important. It's important, you know, to have that perspective and to hear it coming from you. I want to ask you this really fast, and I know it's near and dear to your heart. Bob and I were in Nashville about a year ago. It was last September, and, you know, it's always so much fun to go there because of all of the great live music and all of these just wonderful venues. And I know there's a special place in your heart because you get to play there, and you get to be a part of all of that. Is there any indication on your end of when live music may come back to Nashville, and when you may get to get out and play some shows here in the near future?
I'm not 100% sure on that. You know, they keep saying that we might regress back to like a phase one thing. I'm not 100% sure. I've got some things booked for August in Chattanooga and some things in Ohio in September. But as far as Nashville's concerned, I have no idea. I've had some friends who are already out and about playing some shows, but again, there's been talk of them shutting all that down. I mean, Nashville's doing what we can, right? the Kid Rock bar was in the news lately for holding a restraining order against the local Nashville government, which I thought was really funny.
of course.
Well, no. So, you know, when we talk about the process of becoming a musician and the different things you've done along the way, and this is what I think is interesting too, as someone who with young children, they're older now, but growing up with children, we watched a lot of America's Got Talent, AGT. You were on that show. And, you know, a little bit earlier today, we watched that on YouTube, and it was a tremendous job, and it gives you a great flavor of just your enormous skill on the guitar and with your voice. You're very blessed in that regard. The thing that I'm curious about is what the heck is the process to get on that show? You always see these sort of vignettes when you're watching the show with people lined up around the corner and this and that. How did you make that happen? How did you pull all that together? Because, I mean, first of all, the appearance that we watched was excellent. And the song Ain't No Sunshine was fantastic. But at the end of the day, what's the process like? Do you sit in rooms for hours? Is it how much of a commitment is it? And how'd you get fortunate enough to get on there aside from your talent? Because it's not always talent.
No, you're right. They reached out to my management. Some people from America's Got Talent called my management at the time and they said, hey, we're thinking that he'd be a great fit for the show. And so I got an appointment early on like a Wednesday morning, and I went down into one of the these warehouses in Nashville, and there was an audition. I was there with probably a couple hundred people. Went through an audition process. They kind of cattle call you. You get into one room and with one set of producers, and then they move you into another set of producers, and if those people like you, then they move you to a third set of producers. And then they don't tell you. They don't tell you anything for a few months. And then a few months later, you get an email that says, hey, would you like to be on the show? And you either agree or don't. And that's when they flew me out to New Jersey to do the first audition in front of Howard and the rest of those people.
Yeah, so that was in Newark, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
You appeared dramatically composed for being in front of that large audience and those judges. Again, not the least of which was Howard Stern, of course. What was it like flying in? You're on stage. You've got this big room. You're a natural. So was it any big thing, or what did it take?
It was a little nerve-wracking there in the beginning because you're right. It's Howard Stern, it's Heidi Klum, it's Mel B, it's Howie Mandel. They're all right there in front of you. There's what's his name? Nick Cannon, that just got in trouble for all the anti-Semitic stuff. Nick Cannon's looking weird off in the corner staring at you. It's a weird sort of environment. So I was definitely nervous those first few bars, but I've been playing guitar and singing in front of crowds since I was quite literally a kid. So it wasn't that, it was much less intimidating than getting shot at in Iraq. So.
No, I can imagine that. Holy smokes. holy smokes. So if you care to share with us, what forms of cannabis are the most helpful to you? You talked a bit about sleep. Is that the same pattern, the same way you utilize cannabis today? Consuming it, inhalation, smoking it, and that helps you get a good rest at night. How about some other things? Tell us a little bit for those folks that don't necessarily consume cannabis. Talk about some of the things how this helps you, how this provides relief.
Well, initially, I didn't really need it for pain because a lot of the nerves, due to the nature of my injury, a lot of the nerves on the left-hand side of my leg were just numb. They were dead. So for the longest time, I never needed any sort of pain relief. But over the last 4 or 5 years, my body's been regenerating my nerves again, and I can it's really kind of like a miracle. I can feel the left side of my leg again, which is great, but also that brings with it a pretty significant amount of pain. So I've been using cannabis, a pretty indica dominant is, well, indica, when you live in a state where it's illegal, you get what you can get, but if I can get my hands on it, I prefer an indica. And if I can get a good edible, I would prefer an edible as well. But again, I'm limited to because of where I live.
Sure.
So it's so weird how it came into my life. And then shortly thereafter, everything got better. And what a happy accident that when my nerves start growing back, it also helps for pain relief.
That's That's the thing is that this is a, and we talked to Dr. Carly Bell Biggins not too long ago, and we talked a lot about just how good it would be for veterans and for veterans to have access to this, because it really does. It's something that can provide a lot of relief specific to a lot of the things that the veterans have to deal with. And Saul, you're so cool, calm, and collected, man. It's awesome to talk to you, to get your thoughts on these things, and just to, you know, touch on all the work that you're doing, because we love you. We love following what you're doing, and we appreciate you sharing your story with us and sharing your perspective.
And so how can we support the Wounded Warrior Project?
You can go to woundedwarriorproject.org and find out all the information you want to find out how you can donate and all that stuff. Right now we're doing our soldier ride, but because of social distancing, we're doing a virtual soldier ride, so you can donate or raise money and still do that soldier ride through Wounded Warrior Project. If you want to support me individually as a singer-songwriter, you can find my stuff all over YouTube and iTunes and whatnot. I just released an EP called Heroes, and that's got 6 songs on it, so you can check out some of my music. September 11th, I will be dropping a music video. Follow me on social media at Sal G Music. Yeah, you know, it's funny you guys say that it can help veterans, because I've seen it. I've seen it for the last, I've been working for Wounded Warrior Project since 2012 or 13. This is my 7th or 8th year speaking on behalf of the organization as a spokesperson. And every year I've gone and I've met veterans who either smoke or eat or they ingest cannabis. And it's the same story. It's known, and veterans are getting a hold of it, and they're realizing how good it can be for them. I don't know what the holdup is legally, but it's the demand is there, and veterans know about it. So if you're a veteran and you're even remotely on the fence, I say try it. Just give it a shot, man. It's even if you just switch from drinking to having a new vice in cannabis, that's way better than the alternative. So,
well, Saul, thank you for sharing that message. Definitely go and check out Heroes, the EP, and we will share all those links as well. And keep up with you, man. You're awesome. Keep on rocking, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law, and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.